Thank you, Josh. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Unitarian Church on St. Stephen's Green. The beady-eyed amongst you will notice that I'm not Mary Kate O'Flanagan. My name is Will O'Connell, and I'm a member of the congregation here. We have a long tradition here in this church that members of the congregation sometimes take the services. I won't be doing that today. I'll be doing little bits and pieces here and there, but Mary Kate O'Flanagan will be doing the address, the children's story, a prayer. And I'm delighted to have Mary Kate here. Mary Kate is a friend and collaborator. I first came in contact with Mary Kate online, actually, during lockdown, and I saw one of the stories that she read. I was very moved by it. We eventually found out we had some mutual friends, and some of you will recognize Mary Kate because she brought her one-woman show to this church last February. And if you missed that, you'll have another opportunity to see it again, but I'll speak more about that later on. Mary Kate is an award-winning writer and a storyteller. I am just a regular member of the congregation and delighted to be here. On behalf of the church, welcome. If you're new here, you're most welcome. If you're watching online, welcome. Or if you're listening back during the week. And I've just got a message from Alwyn Fuere, and some of you will know, this is good news, Alwyn is David Heap's wife, and they're on the way to the church today. They're going to be a little bit late. I'm sorry that they're not here now, that I can't ask David to stand up, but David has had some health difficulties, and it's a big endeavour to get him into the church today, but we've been planning this for a while, and so they'll be walking in late, and we're going to ask David to sit in his regular seat there. But I know many of you will be very touched to see David today. I know I am, and delighted to see him back. So, enough about that. We bid you welcome. We bid you welcome who come with weary spirit seeking rest, who come with troubles that are too much with you, who come hurt and afraid. We bid you welcome who come with hope in your heart, who come with anticipation in your step, who come proud and joyous. We bid you welcome who are seekers of a new faith, who come to probe and explore, who come to learn. We bid you welcome who enter this place as a homecoming, who have found here room for your spirit, who find in this people a family. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. And now our chalice lighting. Words you'll be familiar with. At times our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. And now we'll have our first hymn. It's number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Source of life and love, we pray for peace in our world. We seek peace in our hearts, a peace that transcends all understanding, that heals all wounds, that reconciles all conflicts. Grant us the wisdom to seek peace, to pursue dialogue, to embrace diversity, to respect dignity, and to uphold justice. May we be blessed with peace, a peace that is a gift and a responsibility, that is a promise and a challenge, that is a hope and a reality. Amen. I'm now going to invite Mary Kate to come up to the lectern and do her translation of the prayer that Jesus taught us.
Thank you, Will, and thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here today. Source of all that is, perfect mother and father love, we call on your sacred name. Everything in heaven and earth happens according to your divine plan. You shower us with all the blessings we need. Today contains exactly what is right for us in this present moment. You see us in all our humanity through the eyes of infinite love, with nothing but understanding and compassion. You grant us the gift of seeing others with nothing but love and compassion. You guide us always to our highest good and greatest joy. Everything flows from you. Amen.
Thanks, Mary Kate. And our reader today is Alison. Thanks, Alison.
Good morning. In the upcoming presidential election in the United States, Donald Trump's vice president running mate, J.D. Vance, gave an interview in 2021 where he said that the United States was being run by, quote, a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives and the choices that they have made. Well, I am a cat lady with a severe case of OCD. That's obsessive cat disorder. I also love to read, and I am always on the lookout for books that might offer new insights or ways of looking at the world. So when I spotted this book in a Dublin bookstore, I thought, perfect. A book, a cat, and words of wisdom. The book is called Catfulness, and it's a cat's guide to achieving mindfulness by Paolo Valentino. Catfulness is a 7-week program that combines mindfulness and the wisdom of our feline friends. Each day has a contemplation covering topics such as gratefulness, patience, self-care and love, tolerance, all with the hope of cultivating a good life. Sorry. I've chosen to read one of the contemplations from week 4. The heading is, Don't be always looking elsewhere. Don't believe that wonder and discovery are necessarily far away, elsewhere. I only dream of passing my life in the places I already know. My couch, the windowsill, the mat I scratch at. The real journey does not always consist in seeking out new places, but in having new eyes. It was Sigmund Freud who said, time spent with a cat is never time wasted, and I think I agree.
Children like to come up to the front for a story, and then there's Sunday club afterwards. I think Mary Kate is going to read the story from the lectern instead anyway, but it'll be easier to get down to Sunday club so you can... Hi, how are you doing? Don't be scared, I'm more scared than you were. How are you doing? Do you want to come up to the front here and then there's Sunday club after? No, you prefer to sit there. Dead right. Okay, thank you for coming up. You're all very brave. So Mary Kate is going to tell you a story.
Okay, there's a range of ages here, and this is a story, I think that's for quite little people, but I've never stopped loving it. So I hope that you will enjoy it. And it's called A Squash and a Squeeze. A little old lady lived all by herself with a table and chair and a jug on the shelf. A wise old man heard her grumble and grouse. There's not enough room in my house. She said, wise old man, won't you help me, please? My house is a squash and a squeeze. Take in your hen, said the wise old man. Take in my hen? What a curious plan. Well, the hen laid an egg on the fireside rug and flapped round the room, knocking over the jug. The little old lady cried, what shall I do? It was pokey for one and it's tiny for two. My nose has a tickle and there's no room to sneeze. My house is a squash and a squeeze. She said, wise old man, won't you help me, please? My house is a squash and a squeeze. Take in your goat, said the wise old man. Take in my goat? What a curious plan. Well, the goat chewed the curtains and trod on the egg and then sat down to nibble the table leg. The little old lady cried, glory be, it was tiny for two and it's titchy for three. The hen pecks the goat and the goat's got fleas. My house is a squash and a squeeze. And she said, wise old man, won't you help me, please? My house is a squash and a squeeze. Take in your pig, said the wise old man. Take in my pig? What a curious plan. So she took in the pig who kept chasing the hen and raiding the larder again and again. The little old lady cried, "Stop, I implore. It was Titchy for 3 and it's Teeny for 4. Even the pig in the larder agrees, my house is a squash and a squeeze." And she said, "Wise old man, won't you help me, please? My house is a squash and a squeeze." "Take in your cow," said the wise old man. "Take in my cow? What a curious plan." Well, the cow took one look and charged straight at the pig, then jumped on the table and tapped out a jig. The little old lady cried, "Heavens alive, it was Teeny for 4 and it's Weeny for 5. I'm tearing my hair out, I'm down on my knees. My house is a squash and a squeeze." And she said, "Wise old man, won't you help me, please? My house is a squash and a squeeze." "Take them all out," said the wise old man. "But then I'll be back where I first began." But she opened the window and out flew the hen. "Well, that's better. At least I can sneeze again." She shooed out the goat and she shoved out the pig. "My house is beginning to feel pretty big." She huffed and she puffed and she pushed out the cow. "Just look at my house. It's enormous now." "Thank you, old man, for the work you've done." "It was Weeny for 5. It's gigantic for 1. There's no need to grumble. There's no need to grouse. There's plenty of room in my house." And now she's full of frolics and fiddledy-dees. It isn't a squash and it isn't a squeeze. Yes, she's full of frolics and fiddledy-dees. It isn't a squash or a squeeze.
Thanks, Mary Kate. So if you'd like to go down to Sunday Club, I think Denise and Elaine are going to take you down. Thanks very much. And we will sing our second hymn, and it's number 118, "This Little Light of Mine." Thanks, Josh. This is a reading by John O'Donohue that I had waiting for. When love awakens in your life, in the night of your heart, it is like the dawn breaking within you. Where before there was anonymity, now there is intimacy. Where before there was fear, now there is courage. Where before in your life there was awkwardness, now there is a rhythm of grace and gracefulness. Where before you used to be jagged, now you are elegant and in rhythm with yourself. When love awakens in your life, it is like a rebirth, a new beginning. Words from John O'Donohue. We will now have a period of silence for our own thoughts, reflections, prayers. And this period of silence will be brought to an end by Josh playing some music, followed by the address from Mary Kate. Some words before we go into that. Dear God, we give thanks for places of simplicity and peace. Let us find such a place within ourselves. We give thanks for places of refuge and beauty. Let us find such a place within ourselves. We give thanks for places of nature's truth and freedom, of joy, inspiration, and renewal, places where all creatures may find acceptance and belonging. Let us search for these places in the world, in ourselves, and in others. Let us restore them, let us strengthen and protect them, and let us create them. May we mend this outer world according to the truth of our inner life, and may our souls be shaped and nourished by nature's eternal wisdom. Amen.
Thank you, Josh. And thank you, Will, for being ready. Will had told me about the second reading, and I forgot it, but nothing could have been more perfect than what he just read for us. So my name's Mary Kate, and I'm a storyteller, and so are you. Storytelling is a creative gift that, unlike others, is given to every single one of us. We can't all sing, we can't all paint, we can't all dance ballet, but not only can we all tell stories, we must. Storytelling is something that human beings do all day, every day, inside our own heads, even if we don't open our mouths and tell our stories to other people. And stories are the focus of all of my studies and have been at the heart of all my meaningful work. I've been a journalist and I've been a playwright and I've worked in film and television and written short stories. And sometimes when I'm interviewed about my work, I say stories are the central preoccupation of my life. But I realized when I was preparing this address, that's not strictly true. The central preoccupation of my life is seeking the divine or seeking a connection with the divine. I've always believed in God. I remember one time as a thought experiment, I tried not believing in God and it didn't work for me. But there was a long period in my life where I didn't think that God believed in me. And stories brought me back to a relationship with what we can call the source of all that is, or our Heavenly Mother and Father, but we can call it God too. Because my obsession with stories revealed a pattern which I now cannot but see as a design of the divine. But I also have known for a long time, as you do too, that stories have deep, mystical, magical power. I'll give you one demonstration. When I was in college, I loved an American kind of hippie writer called Tom Robbins, and there's a refrain in one of his books, which is, "It's never too late to have a happy childhood." And I thought that was beautiful and poetic, and I used to write it on notebooks and at the end of love notes to my tortured boyfriend in college. But I didn't really understand what it meant until I met a woman who told me this story. And in brief, she said, "You know, I was the only child of quite elderly parents. So they were very strict, you know, and they always made sure that, like, there was, like, a meal on the table and I was sensibly dressed and that I got a good education, that I went to a good school and, you know, they always did my homework, you know, stood over me doing my homework. But she said I would go, she said they never showed me any affection. Like, they hardly ever touched me and they never called me by endearments. And I would go to my friends' houses and I would see them with their parents who were 20 years younger than mine, and their parents would get down on the floor and play with them and laugh with them and take them on their lap and tickle them and, like, put them in bed with them and call them by pet names." And she was like, why do their parents love them and my parents don't love me?" And she said, "You know, I grew quite cold in my feelings towards my parents." And she said, It was only when I was much older, towards the end of their lives, that I could look back and see my parents' entire lives since I was born had been an act of love for me. They were entirely focused on me. They were always there. They always made sure that I got the best nourishment I could. They wanted me to have an education. And that's why they cared so much about homework. And they paid for me to go to the best of schools. And actually, because of them and their beliefs in me, I got to go to university, which was unusual for a woman my age. And she said, "You know, well into my own middle age, I realized that my parents had loved me very, very much. They just had a different way of showing it than other people's parents." And I said to her, "It wasn't too late for you to have a happy childhood, was it?" And I really understood in that moment. I think that's what Tom Robbins meant, that, like, when we tell a story, we pick out of the apparently random universe, or certainly the apparently random events that are happening in our lives, we select certain parts of it, and then we bring them all together. And when we've found the truth at the heart of a story, they become a harmonious whole. And that kind of feels divine to me, like an echo of creation. And one of the things I've noticed is if I have a story that I keep telling with a kind of urgency because I can't find the end of it, and sometimes, you know, particularly when I'm in Los Angeles where there's a lot of homelessness, you see people on the street and they're telling themselves a story and they've gone mad telling themselves this story because they can't find the end of it. It's because they haven't found the meaning of this story. So like storytelling is actually an attempt to wrest some meaning out of our lives. And I think that's why it's an act that echoes the divine, but also a beautiful creative act that can give us faith. I said I went through this period in my life where I didn't believe that, or I didn't think that God believed in me. I don't know that I consciously had that thought, because if I'd consciously had the thought, I would have realized how ridiculous that was. But how I felt was that I had become unworthy and I'd turned away from God's love. But these days I pray every morning to be God aligned in my thoughts and then in my words and actions. I don't want to suggest for a minute that I succeed, but it's my prayer. And one of the things that I think about is that the divine does not want anything. How could infinite love want anything, to get anything from the universe? The divine only has gifts to offer. And I can vacillate between fear and faith all day long and my whole life. But like when I'm in fear, it does not bring out the best of me. When I am in faith, I am able to echo the attitude of infinite love, which is, what do I have to offer here? What am I bringing to the party? Can I be of any help here? How can I serve other and this universe? So when I remember that if I'm in fear, it's because I'm in the middle of a story and I can't see the ending yet. But I do believe that there is a pattern, there is a design in the divine, and I can go with the flow a little bit more than I ever could. And all stories effectively have the same shape. There might be some exceptions, but they're rare. The shape of every story that I've learned from my studies goes like this. Somebody's living their ordinary life, and then the status quo gets upset. So as long as I'm living my life and everything's going fine, good for me, but there's no story to tell. It's like you'll meet me and say, how are you? And I'll go, I'm good, everything's good, right? A story only arises when things stop going well. That in itself is a comfort. But the middle part of a story is when I decide I can see the future and I don't like how it looks. I'm going to try to change this future. I'm going to try and impose my will on the world. And it's really important to me to say about stories, that's a good moment. And I do believe that these desires to take some control, to stand up, to take a stand in our own lives, are divinely implanted, and we should look out for them and we should welcome them. But the middle part of a story is always struggle. It's always pain. It's always difficulty. It's always challenges. And if it wasn't, it wouldn't be a story, right? If I was just like, I was poor and I decided to be rich and I bought a lottery ticket and I won, boom. Well, hooray for me, but it wasn't much of a story, right? You know, the story is where the struggle happens. The story is where my desire to achieve something in my life, to change the course of events, bumps up against the way life is going. And my persistence meets resistance. But because I have this intense desire, I keep going. But the part that I find so interesting is that a story doesn't end when somebody does or doesn't get their desire. That's only the end of the middle of the story. There's always a twist, and the story isn't over until we discover what the gift was. And the gift is always something that was inside us. Maybe it was a seed inside us, but it grew because of the struggle that we went through. Or another way of thinking about it for me is the middle of a story is always what I want from the world. And that might be something noble. I might want to build houses in Africa, or I might want to become a better educated person. It might be something natural and good, like I want to find love. But it's still about me wanting something from the world. But the story isn't over until I discover what the world wanted from me. And that's where the meaning comes from. And that's why when I feel like I've struggled in vain, or something has happened in my world or anyone's world that seems pointless or meaningless, I find it a great solace to say, the story isn't over yet, because we will know when the story is over, because it will make sense to us. So I'm going to tell you a story from my own life now that I hope will be an illustration of all of this, and I hope it will be an inspiration to you to know that the story of your life is 100% the design of the divine, and in its own time it will reveal its gifts. So a number of years ago, I opened my mouth and nothing came out. This had kept happening to me. I kept losing my voice. And I went to an ear, nose and throat specialist and I said, help me, you have to help me. I can't go around whispering all the time. And he said, you absolutely must not go around whispering. He said, you have terrible abrasion on your vocal cords and the worst thing you can do in that situation is to whisper. So he said, I'm putting you on complete voice rest. But in the meantime, he said, there's not much we can do for you. The reason you have this abrasion on your vocal cords is you're holding a great deal of tension in your throat. So I'm going to send you to a speech therapist who will teach you how to relax that tension in your throat and how to speak without putting pressure on your vocal cords. So I was 24 and I was mute on doctor's orders. I don't know if you've ever tried to live your life without your voice, but it's not an easy thing to do. I couldn't do my all-time favorite thing, which was chatting, and I couldn't do my job, and I couldn't do ordinary things like buy a train ticket or go into a shop. I had to have a little notebook and pen like your woman from the piano just to perform ordinary tasks. But after a couple of weeks, I got to go and see this speech therapist, and she took one look at my name on the intake form. This was in London, and she went, Mary Kate O'Flanagan, convent girl? And I went, and she said, yeah, I see a lot of you. She said, you know, the nuns do a good job of teaching you beautiful manners, but they also teach you to suppress your voice rather than say something that could upset other people. So then she said, this is a strange question, but do you mind if I ask you, are you a survivor? And I thought that was a weird question, but I'll be honest with you, if the conversation's about me, I'll follow wherever it's going. So I wrote in my little notebook, I like to think so. And she said, no, you haven't understood what I'm asking you. I'm asking you, are you a survivor? So once I understood what she meant, there was no need for me to write anything. She could read it all over me. And she said, yeah. And she said, I see a lot of that too. And she said, here's the thing. Your voice is really closely linked with emotions. So I can give you these exercises to do and your voice will come back. But unless you get some therapy, I promise you this is going to keep happening. So I left her office and I thought, oh, I do not want to go to therapy. I don't want to shine a light on the dark things inside me. But I was pretty sure that the unspeakable thing that was caught in my throat was also the reason that I had a disastrous and chaotic love life. And I didn't want that. So I decided to go to therapy. So now, I don't know if you've ever done talk therapy, but it's a long and slow process, especially if the reason you're going is because you can't talk. And after a couple of years, I found myself lamenting to this friend of mine that I couldn't see any measurable progress. And she said to me, "Oh, honey, that's because you're trying to heal your soul. You can't heal your soul with just talk therapy." And I said, how do you heal your soul? And she said, "For you, I would recommend Reiki." So I went along to a Reiki healer and I handed over £50 and I lay on a plinth while this woman ran her hands in the air above my body. And I thought, okay, I'm one of these people now. I kept flashing back to when my sisters and I had laughed ourselves silly because a friend of ours had paid to have her aura massaged. And I was like, I don't know how this is any different. But when I left there, I was suffused with this undeniable feeling of well-being. And I thought, something's happened. So I started going to Reiki regularly. And then Reiki led to reflexology. And then reflexology led to acupuncture. And I attended acupuncture in a holistic health center. And I found myself in this holistic health center standing in front of a cork board with all these flyers and cards for lots of wild and wonderful healing modalities. And as time went on, I was still living kind of what looked like a sort of conservative life. Like, I would go to work in an office wearing a suit and carrying a briefcase. But I was also spending more and more of my spare time and my spare cash going to drumming circles and tree-hugging ceremonies and fasting and yoga retreats. And eventually, I found myself at a one time, sometimes my two lives would collide. One time I was driving around with my sisters, and whatever we were talking about, I said, "Well, my rebirther says that," and my sister Rachel said, "Pause." She was like, "I'm sorry, we'll get to the rest of that sentence in a minute, but let's unpack this first. You have a rebirther?" But eventually I found myself at a week-long residential workshop based on the amazing work of the wonderful Louise Hay, the book called You Can Heal Your Life, and this was a week-long workshop of that. And I was paired up with one other woman during this week for a particular exercise, and I said to her, "You know what? I've been at this crack for decades. I wish I could just be fixed." And she said, why do you think you need to be fixed?" And I said, "Because where is he? Like, where is he? If I was fixed, then I'd be able to have a happy romantic relationship that lasted more than a couple of months." And she said, "What if your life is exactly the way it's supposed to be?" And I thought about that for a minute. And then I saw with a clang of clarity that if I got what I wanted when I was 24, to meet someone and fall in love and live happily ever after, I might not have seen the sunrise on a beach in Thailand while I was doing yoga. I might not have got to wrap my arms around the baobab trees in the Okavango Delta of Botswana. And I might not have felt bliss at the top of the bubbly gardens in Florence after climbing up there on my own. And I thought, I wouldn't have met the other people who turn up in parish halls and community centres and yurts and fields. The other people who feel like maybe they're a bit bockety and a bit broken. But the people who keep turning their faces to the sunlight of the spirit, the people who keep the faith that regardless of the wreckage of the past, tomorrow could be better. I love those people. They're my people. And I don't think I would have had a chance to develop what might be my superpower, which is making friends. And in that moment, I saw my life like a pearl grown up around a grain of sand. beautiful because of my ancient scar and not despite it. And I saw that there was nothing about it and nothing about me that needed to be fixed. And I know that was true because a couple of years later, I got chatting to a nun at a luggage carousel in Copenhagen Airport. I love nuns and I stalk them. And as I was chatting to her, I realised that she was this famous nun, like not just famous in Catholic circles, but famous in woo-woo circles, because she is a bona fide faith healer with a number of miracles to her name. And I didn't ask her to lay her hands on me. I didn't want anything from her. I just asked her about herself and her travels and her own spiritual journey. So it was kind of a surprise when we were parting. And she took from out of the pocket of her robes a little turquoise beaded bracelet. And she slipped it onto my wrist. And she said, "I'm a matchmaker too, you know." And I thought, what a strange thing to say to a middle-aged woman. Especially because for decades, I've employed the old trick of the female solo traveller, which is to wear a ring on your wedding finger, gives the impression of a male protector about to appear. But then he did appear. A tall, dark, handsome man who'd been in my orbit for a while took me by the hand and then took me into his arms and said, "Will we give it a go?" And I thought, I don't believe it. After all the shamanic guides and the voodoo priestesses and the rebirthing breath coaches, it was a good old-fashioned Irish nun who broke the spell and brought me to my true love. But here's the thing. As much as I've appreciated that man's presence in my life and treasured the love that we share, he is not the gift of this story. The gift of this story is that somewhere along that long and winding road, I found my voice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Kate. So we will now have our third hymn, and it's number 205, Amazing Grace. Thanks, Josh. And this will be followed by the collection. Our notices. Tea and coffee is served downstairs at the service, so please do join us, particularly if you're new, and if this is your first time at the church, your tea and coffee is free. There are copies of the Auskult magazine for October on the table outside. Please help yourself. Monday at 7:30, there is a meeting of the managing committee via Zoom. That's this coming Monday, is that right? Okay. And next Sunday, we have our Harvest Thanksgiving lunch, and volunteers have promised food. The Damer Hall is booked, so we can set up on Saturday. So now we need people to come along, make a donation to Christian Aid, and enjoy the food and the company. And there's an opportunity to get to know one another better. So that's next Sunday after the service. Please come along. The Walking Club, this is from Marcus. Our next walk is Sunday, the 26th of October, to Newbridge House and Farm and Park. Meet up at 10:30 at Coach House Cafe and start walking at 11 a.m. The walk is for about 2.5 hours, not including the picnic. Appropriate clothing and footwear depending on the weather. And any further information from Marcus, or come and speak to me afterwards. The book club. Meetings take place on the last Wednesday of every month in the church vestry at 7:30 p.m. All are welcome. And the book club list is for October. Let me scroll down here, is The House of Doors by Tan Thuan Eng. And obviously on Wednesday at 1:05, the usual meditation service takes place in the church or online. So if you find yourself in town, please come along on Wednesday, and that's led by Pamela McCarthy. I think that is all of the notices there. Of course, Josh.
A quick announcement. Many of you will remember during the pandemic we had two collaborative services with the Fourth Universalist Society of New York. Various members of us have kept the contact since, and it's always a pleasure attending their services, which obviously are on Sunday afternoons for us. But just to say, I started on Thursday evening attending a course that their religious education department are running about Emerson and the Transcendentalist movement. And I found it very interesting. Obviously, it's quite late at night for us in our time zone, so it might not suit anyone. But Zach, who is now the Director of Religious Education, said to me as I arrived onto the Zoom call, please tell your congregation that anybody who would be interested in attending on a Thursday evening, it's like midnight on Thursday, so it probably doesn't suit anybody. But I said that I would pass on the message. Although the team, the ministry team in 4th U now is not the same as it was when we were doing our services, there's still a lovely gang of people to be hanging out with, and I greatly enjoyed Thursday evening. And so it's going to be every Thursday evening for the foreseeable future, obviously Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year and stuff like that accepted. But anyway, I said I'd pass on the message.
Thanks very much, Josh. And just some words of thanks. Thank you, Josh, for all the music, and Ayla for setting up the church. Welcomers, Kevin and Gronia. Flowers, Doreen, and on coffee, Sean and Doreen and David. And thank you all for being here. A very special thanks to Mary-Kate for coming along, sharing her experience, strength, hope, wisdom, and stories. And yes, if you liked Mary-Kate's stories, if you weren't at the church last February, Mary-Kate will be repeating her show in Smock Alley and Civic Theatre in Tala. The Civic dates are the 22nd of October, for that's the Tuesday until the Friday, and there's a matinee, and then the 5th of November to the 9th, I believe, or 4th, yeah, that week anyway, in Smock Alley Theatre, if you'd like to hear more of Mary-Kate's stories. So we will finish, and just to say as well, Mary-Kate chose all the hymns today, and thank you for those great hymns. And we finish with a very familiar one to us. I don't know if Bill is watching, but it is his favourite hymn as well. But Nearer My God to Thee, number 87. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about you, everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about others, and everything I think I know about my journey, so that I may have an open mind and a new experience with these things, and come to know you, myself, and others better. Please help me see the truth. Amen.